Thank you for listening to this recording of Family Bible Church's Sunday morning message. We pray that God will use this word to bless and encourage you.
Hey, and as you sit down and you're grabbing your Bible, turn it, if you don't mind, to 2 Chronicles chapter 23. And we're going to continue our journey through the southern kingdom. And so, if you remember, I got to go to the back. Let me see. Okay. There was somebody supposed to touch the button back there. Yeah, but it's okay. I think it's running. So we've been looking at the southern tribe. And over the last couple weeks, we've seen the importance of the influence of leaders. And so Chuck and Steve talked about the revival ministry and influence of Asa and Jehoshaphat, and we saw the restoration of the land. But then last week, we saw the problem with Jehoshaphat was that though he was a godly man, he made some improper decisions. And so he influenced his nation posthumously, if you would, by making Jehoash, his son, and not Jehoash, making who? Jehoram, all these Jehoram, the next king, okay? Before he did that, he married Jehoram off. To who? Anybody remember? Athaliah, to the daughter of Ahab, okay? Essentially the daughter of Jezebel. And Chuck, actually, that was a great Athaliah. It's probably exactly how it's supposed to be stated, Athaliah. Because the I-A-H, again, at the end, is really the Yod, Hey, at the end, which is Yahweh, okay? And so that's probably Athaliah is probably how you'd really say her name. We say Athaliah. And I said it for some reason that when he first said it, I went, Athaliah. And then I thought to myself, yeah, that's actually right, Athaliah. That's Athaliah. Maybe I'll try to remember to say it that way because that's what her name was. And so even though she had this name that had Yahweh's name recorded in it, she was a wicked woman. And last week we ended with the little cartoonish thing that about looking at the end of what she's known for. And we read in 2 Chronicles 22, then when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, or Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, and destroyed all the royal heirs of the house of Judah. And again, as we ended last week, we said that our reaction should be, oh no, oh no. Because if she destroys all the royal heirs of the house of Judah, then what?
No Messiah,
right? And so we should have this, you know, will her diabolical plan succeed, you know? And I told you to come back next week to discover the actions of Jehoiada the priest. And so this is a critical moment in the nation of Judah, okay, nation of Israel as a whole, but the Judah as a whole. Because at this moment, Jehoshaphat, who was the godly king, has really, posthumously, given control over to this nation, to Ahab, in his house, okay? And how dreadful it is at this moment. And what we're going to see in this message today is not just the importance of the leaders of the kings in their influence, but just people as a whole. And hopefully, a little bit of, so who am I, and how do I respond when I see, politically, unrighteousness, ungodliness, things going on? What potentially is my role? Now, I'm not saying it's going to be a role for everybody, but potentially God is going to raise somebody up in this role, okay? And we're going to see that. Secondly, as well, and critical as well, is the importance of your influence, period. Not just in a political realm, but just the importance of your influence in the life of other people. Okay? That each one of us know people. We each network. I mean, networking is kind of like one of these terms today, right? You know, we have all the social networks, okay? And it's been shown over time that, you know, there is this 3 degrees of difference between you and anybody in the world. And I don't know if it's totally true for everybody different people. You know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, okay? And that theoretically you can go to anybody in the world and you can try to find in within their networks, you know, people who know people. And so you say, well, that's really kind of weird. So just think about even Naomi Niger, right? There's a lot of people in Naomi Niger that only have one point of difference between you and them. And that is the Corbins. That's exactly right. So you think about that, okay? My brother has gone to countless countries now. He's leaving this week for Uganda for a week or two to witness. And he's going up into the bush up near the border with, anyways, where all the refugees are. So he's going to the refugee camp to witness there. And so he knows hundreds and thousands of people all over the world that I'll never know, and you'd never know. But you know me, and I know him, and he knows them. And you know what the weirdest thing is? As third world, as we look at the rest of the world, they have Facebook. When I was in Peru, and I can show you the pictures, you've seen them, the dirt streets, they have no doors. You know, they had a cell phone, and they had Facebook. And there, right there, when I'm talking to them, they want to become friends with me on Facebook. In the jungles, the Amazon jungle, in the Amazon basin of Peru, I'm becoming friends with people all around the world. So now, I mean, I track. I mean, I there's a pastor there in Tarapoto that I track. He was my partner, you know, and all the people that I interrelated with down there. It's really kind of an amazing thing. All the Spanish stuff comes up, and I have to keep hitting see translation, because I haven't got a clue, okay? So all those people in Peru, though, you have that one degree of difference with them. Does that make sense? So influence. So I get to weekly, if you would, influence you. But I recognize the fact that the potential of influencing you, and we've talked about this in the past, really it's magnified a thousandfold potentially by the people that you have the opportunity to influence. And you're only one group of people that I get to influence. On Tuesday night, I've got a board meeting. So do you. And so for the Homeschool Association, okay, now there's only going to be potentially six other couples there, but I have the opportunity to do what? Influence those couples. In influencing those couples and being on that board, I have the opportunity to potentially influence hundreds of other people who are members of that association and who have been members of that association. Do you get it? That's just two little illustrations. And I can go to the rest of my life and talk about the potentials of influence that I have. You have those potentials that are out there. The question is, how are you using those potential possibilities for influence? George, you just came back from New York. Why did you go to New York? To influence, didn't you? I mean, honestly, I mean, you went to see your family, but you went to see your family with a purpose, did you not? And you went to have a purpose of hopefully influencing them for Christ, okay? And so it's a purposeful influence. Does that make sense? That's where we want to go. Now, again, then the tertiary thing here, okay, coming in here, which is really going to be looking like the main thing that we look at, okay, is that we're going to look from the life of Joash, bipolar. It's almost like he's bipolar, but not on a daily basis, but it's like in his lifetime. Because there's this one Joash that we're going to see here, but then in the end of his life, there's this other Joash. And these two Joashes are there because of the influence of other people in his life. Now, straight up ahead of time, I get Joash, okay? I know that I can be easily influenced. Not everybody is. The ones who aren't usually are very prideful and arrogant. And so they have a problem on the other side. Okay? Now, I'm not trying to be mean, okay? But think about it. If someone is like not willing to listen to anybody, then they think they're what? Always right. That's pride and arrogance. But the other end of the continuum is listening to and mocking and mirroring everything somebody tells you. Okay? We've got to be find this balance in between of being willing to listen to and accept the input from other people, but not readily doing what? Following after it. There is one to whom I should be ready to follow and be influenced by at all times. And that is Christ. It's God. But again, I can't be that if I'm not dedicating myself to him, spending time in his word. So we want to look at this as we go through the life of Joash. First thing we want to look at is this influence of Jehoiada. Jehoiada is such a phenomenal man. And, you know, I know we're going through the judges, but remember, there was a period of time when we kind of stopped and we looked at the life of Elijah and we looked at the life of Elisha and how God used them, right? Well, today we get to look at, for a brief moment here, the life of Jehoiada. Jehoiada is a phenomenal man, and I hope that you get a great appreciation for this guy as we come through. The first thing we see immediately as Athaliah, okay, goes to destroy all the heirs of Judah, that Jehoiada and his wife see this thing coming, and they do what? They take their son and they hide him. Is that right? Yes or no? Thumbs up or thumbs down? Come on. Got to make a decision. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Did they take their 7-year-old son and hide him? No, you're wrong. They didn't. It wasn't their son. Joash isn't his son. This is one of the king's other sons, okay? And so they just saw this thing coming. Now, where his mom's really at, I don't know. We never read about her other than this. He was the son of so-and-so, okay? But Jehoiada and his wife see what's happening. And they go and they grab Joash. Jehoash is his formal name. Joash is, so Robert, Bob, remember what we talked about that stuff, right? So Joash is like Bob, Jehoash is like Robert. So they take Jehoash, right? And they sequester him away and his nurse. So they take him away and they hide them, okay? Again, I don't know where mom's at, but they see a need that's going on. They recognize what's happening. If she is able to destroy all the heirs, then what? Just what we said earlier. Then the plan of God is destroyed, right? Do you realize that behind the scenes, this is kind of a freebie kind of thrown in there, that there's been a war going on from the beginning between Satan and God? And Satan sort of knows the plan of God. He doesn't know the day or the hour. He doesn't know all the details of it. But he does know what? That God himself is going to what? He's going to come and he's going to pay the penalty of sins. Now, I know he already back there and coming through the process, okay? So he knows that. And God has revealed how he's going to do that. He was going to be born of a, well, that's coming Isaiah. You're too far up in, okay? So think of this part of the time. Isaiah wasn't living yet. He was going to be born of a woman, right? We know that from Genesis chapter 3. It was part of the curse. The same time he's cursing the Satan, right? He's also putting in it that the seed of woman is going to what? Destroy his head, going to bruise his head, okay? So there's that whole concept in there that's coming through. And so then we read that it's going to come, the seed's going to come from Abraham. Then we see that the seed's going to come through Isaac, Jacob, then through Judah, okay? And then we see it even more defined, Phyllis, you got it, through David, okay? And so Satan knows this thing. Do you think Satan has sought to destroy this plan? Oh, yeah. I mean, Abraham goes to Egypt and sells off Sarai. Well, I didn't really sell her off, right? But has Sarai being taken by Pharaoh, right? Well, what's the problem with that? Well, a big problem with that. Whose seed is it? Okay, so God steps in and destroys the plan of Satan and says, no, we're keeping this line pure. This is my plan, right? So we have another one of these occasions where we have this evil Athaliah, I think, being used of the devil, okay? She is, in a sense, an antichrist at this moment. And she's seeking to destroy all the royal heirs to get rid of. Now, she doesn't maybe know this. She's a pawn in this spiritual war that's going on to destroy the plan of God. Can God's plan be destroyed? No. And so God uses Jehoiada and his wife to spare the final heir Jehoash. Jehoash is just a baby. I don't know how old, but we're told he's a child. Because they keep him for 7 years, and he's 7 years old when he becomes a king, so he must have been a baby. Does it make sense? So he must have been a newborn. It's like Axel being born, you know, and me grabbing Axel and hiding him away for 7 years, okay? Now, so God uses Jehoiada to preserve the Davidic line, okay? This is a huge thing, okay? And so now he keeps him, and think about this. Who knows about this? In the nurse, okay? Potentially, what we read is only three people. They've been able to keep this thing secret. And so they're probably taking food in. And I mean, who knows? This nurse is probably living in this bedroom for 7 years. Can you imagine this? Okay. And so the plan is here. And they're hiding this child for 7 years till they can come to this point where they have the preparation for the coronation. That when Joash is 7 years old, they come together to present him, for him to be made the king of Judah. And so before, when Jehoiada goes to do this, right, we see here in 2 Chronicles then, chapter 23, okay, we read then as he does this, beginning of verse 3, let's go, just start verse 1. So in the seventh year, Jehoiada strengthened himself and made a covenant with the captains of the hundreds, Azariah, the son of Jeroham, Ishmael, the son of Jehonan, Azariah, the son of Obed, Maaseiah, the son of Adaiah, and Elishavat, the son of Zikri. And they went throughout Judah and gathered the Levites from all the cities of Judah and the chief fathers of Israel, and they came to Jerusalem. Then all the assembly made a covenant with the king. Who's that? Joash. Joash. He's the rightful what? King. He hasn't been coronated yet, but he is the rightful king. Is Athaliah the rightful queen? No. She's a usurper. Okay? And so they make a covenant with the king in the house of God. And he said to them, "Behold, the king's son shall reign as Yahweh has said of the sons of David. This is what you shall do. One third of you entering the Sabbath, on the Sabbath of the priests and the Levites shall be keeping watch over the doors. One third shall be at the king's house and one third at the gate of the foundation. All the people shall be in the courts of the house of Yahweh." So on and so on and so forth. Okay. And so he makes this plan. He gets all these priests together. He realizes the best day to do this is on the Sabbath. Why? Because there is now the changeover of one portion of the priests who are coming to serve and the portion of the priests who are already there, okay? So they have all these priests who are already serving during the course of the week, okay? And then another next group is coming to replace them, right? And so, and there's going to be lots of what? People there on the Sabbath at the temple, okay? So this is the perfect timing. So he brings them in ahead of time, though, and warns them and says, okay, here's how we're going to do this. Okay, so a third of you are going to be on the walls, and a third of you are going to do this, and a third of you are going to protect the king. Okay, and we're going to formulate this plan because we're expecting what? An attempt at assassination by who? Athaliah. That's exactly right. What are we expecting when Athaliah finds out? Okay, she's not a pleasant woman. Okay. She's probably, you know, again, we can't prove she's Jezebel's daughter. She's Ahab's daughter, but probably Jezebel's daughter. And so walking in the same line, okay, there's nothing that's going to want to stop her, okay? And she's probably going to order the army to come after. Now, again, this is the temple army who's there, the priests and the Levites, right? But there still is a Judean army, okay? And so there's a potential for a civil war at this moment. Do you get it? Okay, this is a big deal. Okay, so, but what I love at this moment between this preservation of the Davidic line and the preparation for the coronation, okay, and you're going to see even more of this as we go through this, Jehoiada could have chosen to be usurper himself. Yes? He recognized that Athaliah has no claim over the crown, and so he secretes that's probably the wrong word, secreted, whatever the right word there was, secrets Joash away and hides him for 7 years. But he could have immediately made a movement to take the role, but he recognized that it was not his to take. Do you get it? This is a huge little point to me. Jehoiada recognizes as a priest being the ruler of Israel his to take. And so he waited patiently. Now this is going to become bigger in a moment, okay? Because we're going to look at a little more details of Jehoiada. I don't want to spoil that right now, okay? But this is a huge decision. He's waiting 7 years. How many things can happen in 7 years? A whole lot of things happen in 7 years. But he's trusting what? In God to do this. And so he brings all these priests together, right? And the day comes, and he brings out Jehoash, right? And he crowns him. Noise of this, the sound of it, comes to Athaliah. Now, Friday, I was telling this some just a little bit earlier. So I'm studying today, right, in the office. And throughout the day, the house was shaking. I'd love to tell you because I was praying in the house. It's because they were yanking trees out right here and then just dropping them. Boom! And literally, that two-story house was like, boom, just shaking. It was kind of hard to know that something wasn't what? Happening. I kind of feel like that's what was going on for Athaliah in the temple. They didn't have windows. They didn't have central air. You know, so it wasn't, the windows were what? They were wide open, right? And there is a ruckus going on at the temple right across the street, if you would. And she almost see her get up and look out the window to find out what's going on. And I almost feel that probably Jehoiada did this where Athaliah would be able to see. And Athaliah starts to occur, and they're blowing the trumpets, and they're hailing the new king, right? She comes out and yells, treason, treason. When's the last time we heard someone yell treason, treason? Anybody remember? It was when Jehu came to Jezreel, and potentially her mom, Jezebel, is standing in the upper window, and she says what? It's treason! It's treason! You know? And so Jehu looks up to the eunuchs on either side of her and says, well, not first. He says, who's on my side? And he probably sees the eyes point to him, you know, and he says, get rid of her. And so same thing happens here, right? She cries out, treason, treason. And so when she cries out treason, Jehoiada, verse 14, chapter 33, Jehoiada the priest brought out the captains of hundreds who were set over the army and said to them, take her outside under guard and slay with the sword whoever follows her. Okay? He's ready for this moment. And he seizes the moment, okay? And so we have the preparation of the coronation, and then we have purification then of the land. He makes Jehoash the king, okay? He doesn't keep it for himself. He makes him the king, okay? And then he begins to purify the land, okay? And the first step of purifying the land is getting rid of Athaliah, and getting rid of Baals. So verse 15, so they seized her, and she went by the way of the entrance of the horse gate into the king's house, and they killed her there. Then Jehoiada made a covenant between himself, the people, and the king, that they should be Yahweh's people. And all the people went to the temple of Baal and tore it down. They broke it in pieces and broke in pieces its altars and images and killed Matan, the priest of Baal, before the altars. Also Jehoiada appointed the oversight of the house of Yahweh to the hands of the priests, the Levites whom David had assigned in the house of Yahweh to offer the burnt offerings of the Lord as it is written in the law of Moses, with rejoicing and with singing, as it was established by David. And he set the gatekeepers at the gates of the house of Yahweh so that no one who was in any way unclean should enter. Then he took the captains of the hundreds, the nobles, the governors of the people, and all the people of the land, and brought the king down from the house of Yahweh, and they went through the upper gate to the king's house, and he set the king on the throne of the kingdom. So all the people of the land rejoiced, and the city was quiet, for they had slain Athaliah with the sword. So we have this removal of Athaliah and Baals, and the restoration of the priesthood in the temple. So Jehoiada, you could tell that he has this thing in his mind. He knows what the next step's going to be, right? So he preserves the Davidic line. He sets Jehoash there, but he doesn't stop right there. Immediately, he's cleansing the land. He's cleansing the land, and he's restoring true worship. The next thing we see is his influence over the king, okay? His influence over the king, because we're going to see this coming out a little bit later on here, that the king is going to make this decree. He's going to make this proclamation, chapter 41, 24. Verse 1, Joash was 7 years old when he became king, and he reigned for 40 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Zibiah of Beersheba. Joash did what was right in the sight of Yahweh all the days of Jehoiada the priest. We'll talk about that in a moment. And Jehoiada took two wives for him, and he had sons and daughters. Now it happened after this that Joash set his heart on repairing the house of Yahweh. Then he gathered the priests and the Levites and said to them, go out to the cities of Judah and gather from all the Israel money to repair the house of your God from year to year and see that you do it quickly. However, the Levites did not do it quickly. So the king called Jehoiada the chief priest and said to him, why have you not required the Levites to bring in from Judah and from Jerusalem the collection according to the commandment of Moses, the servant of Yahweh, and of the assembly of Israel for the tabernacle of witness? For the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman, had broken into the house of God and also presented all the dedicated things of the house of Yahweh to Baals. Then at the king's command, they made a chest and set it outside at the gate of the house of Yahweh. And they made a proclamation throughout Judah and Jerusalem to bring to Yahweh the collection that Moses, the servant of God, had imposed on Israel in the wilderness. Okay, now, in your mind, or you can go back to 2 Kings 12 if you want, but this is the portion that Chuck read a little bit earlier, okay? It's slightly different here than it was in 2 Kings chapter 12. This gives us a little bit more detail, and 2 Kings 12 gives us a little bit more detail, okay? So, one of the pieces of detail that we want to know right now is, first of all, approximately how old was Joash when all this transpired? Well, we know that from 2 Kings chapter 12, because we know that he gives this command, okay? He sets his heart, okay? The heart of the king was set on repairing the temple, right? And he gives this command that everybody should be able to bring in their money, right? And he gives the command initially to who? The priest. When? When did he give it? Anybody remember from 2 Kings chapter 12 when Chuck was reading? Nope. He was 7 when he becomes king.
He was 6 in chapter 12 when they called the elders of the people and came in.
No. In the 23rd year of Joash is when he calls them to task, calls the priest to task for not doing what he said. So probably around the 20th year of Joash is probably, so he's in his mid-20s, and decides that he's going to do this. The priests have theoretically been serving, right? Jehoiada reinstates all this stuff, but there's still repairs that need to be made. Jehoiada wasn't doing that. But I think that behind the scenes, Jehoiada is probably what? Talking to Joash. What did we read? That Joash served the Lord as long as Jehoiada was alive. Do you get it? So behind the scenes, Jehoiada is what?
Mentoring.
Good term. Discipling, influencing. Mentoring Joash. Influencing Joash. And so Joash's heart turns toward the temple of God and restoring the temple of God, but I believe it's because of the influence of Jehoiada. And so his heart is turned toward Yahweh, and he wants to be able to do this stuff, and so he goes the priest and says, I want you to do this collection. And so he goes and he tells him that. And so he says, you know, go out throughout all the land and get it. And so it's not being done though. In the 23rd year of Joash, he comes back and he says, so where's the money? Where's the work? What's going on? What was happening? Nothing. Nothing. In fact, what we read from 2 Kings chapter 12, potentially some of the priests had gone throughout their territory, their constituencies, and they did what? And they collected money. Ah,
And they kept it for themselves. Now, we don't know. I don't want to do the argument from silence thing here. But all I know is it didn't make it into the temple for the repairs. Make sense? And so Joash says, wait, this isn't right. Jehoiada is probably just aghast at this as well. Okay? I believe he's the high priest. And I think he's probably aghast at this whole thing. And so they come together and make this agreement that the priests aren't going to do this anymore. So from 2 Kings 12, we read that Jehoiada makes this chest and bores a hole in it. But from 2 Chronicles, we just read that it was the command of Joash to make that. If you ever wonder, why do we have an offering box in the back and we don't pass a plate? This is the passage. This is why we do it. So that when people have a desire to worship God through their resources, that they would bring it, just as they did here. That it wasn't a matter of extortion of passing a plate. And I'm not trying to pick on other churches that have a plate. I don't mean it that way. But in my mind, in my heart, before I was saved and as I was first saved, I never understood the concept of the passing of the plate. It didn't make sense to me. I know we had that even when in my church growing up, okay? But there were too many people who, when the plate came by, felt what? Obligated. God doesn't want your gifts of obligations. He owns it. It belongs to him. He wants it as a free will offering. And so that was the whole idea. And I remember back at the previous church I was at when we first did this, there was a lot of concern about not passing a plate and only having a box out there, that the offerings were going to plummet. Do you realize from that moment, the offerings multiplied? I'm not joking. I'm for serious. It was because I watched it. I wasn't concerned, but I knew that as a leader, I was going to be held accountable for this decision, you know, in the offerings. And no, I didn't pad the offerings. And so, yeah. Gave a lot those 2 months. And but they went up. It's amazing how God can provide for his own work. The free will offering. And so then, note what happens then. So they get this offering, and now they're going to use not the priest to do this, but now when the money was collected, do you note the technicalities that Chuck read, and I'm not sure if it's the details are here. Yes. And so, verse 11, so it was at that time, when they come to get the money, when the chest was brought to the king's official by the hand of the Levites, and when they saw that there was much money, that the king's scribe and the high priest's officer came and emptied the chest. So how did they count the money? There were what? Two people. There was accountability. There wasn't just somebody from the priesthood, there was also some king's, one of the king's scribes. There was accountability. They had two people come together to count the money, so there was accountability. Accountability is so huge. Okay? It's very huge. It's very huge in business. It's very huge in a church, okay? God shows accountability. So we want to keep moving on. But this proclamation of the king. So this king, I think this all comes from the influence of Jehoiada. Now, this final thing is huge for when we look at Jehoiada here. So keep moving on. We're going to go past the work that was going on, okay? Verse 14, when they had finished, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada. They made from its articles for the house of Yahweh, articles for serving and offering spoons and vessels of gold and silver, and they offered burnt offerings in the house of Yahweh continually all the days of Jehoiada. You note this, all the days of Jehoiada keeps showing up, right? But Jehoiada grew old and was full of days, and he died. He was 130 years old when he died. 130. Do you realize at this point in history how unusual that was? 130 years old? I mean, it was a big deal when the kings made it into their 60s. They become a king in their 20s and they reign for 40 years. They're only in their 60s when they die. Jehoiada dies at 130. Now, this is huge. I'm going to show you. Now, there's going to be some fine point even on the screen. But this is huge. I'm a math guy. So I love chronologies, okay? I've spent years in chronology of the Bible. And every time I feel like I get more details, I write them down, okay? So this is just a portion of my chronology, okay? And so for those who don't understand AM, I'm not talking about the morning, that's Anno Mundi. Okay, Anno Mundi is very critical because Anno Mundi means year of the world. Mundi, world. Okay, so it's Latin, year of the world. And so this is starting from creation. So creation is zero Anno Mundi. Does that make sense? Okay. So and so you could go on and so Adam was however old he was, we're not really told, at zero Anno Mundi. Maybe he was 25, maybe he was 30, I don't know. But we'll say that Adam was what? Zero, okay, because he was created. Okay? And he dies when he's 950. So at 950 Anno Mundi, Adam dies. Okay? So this kind of gives you an idea of where we're at. So at 3184, and I could be off statistically, okay, statistics are a wonderful thing. I'm sure giving a percentage, I'm off a little bit on my exact date. Okay? So I'm not claiming any, this is the date, you gotta claim this one, okay? 3184 is this date on my chronology, going through this. At 3184, Solomon dies and the kingdom is divided. Okay? Now, where we want to look is way down here. Okay? Because we have Rehoboam, we have Abijam, we have Asa, we have Jehoshaphat, we have Jehoram, we have Ahaziah, we have Athaliah, okay? And so then Jehoash begins to reign in the year 3283 Mundi. Okay? And he reigns for 40 years. That means he reigns all the way until 3323, okay? So Joash dies 3322, okay? So he dies. But before he died, Jehoiada died, right? But Jehoiada dies, okay, at 130. So the question is, well, how do I know when did he die? Well, let's talk about this. God gives us what? Details in his word, and he does it for a reason. So in 2 Kings 12, he tells us, but not in 2 Chronicles, in 2 Kings 12, he tells us that all this occurred in the 23rd year of Joash. That kind of gives us an idea. Because when it happened in the 23rd year of Joash, who did he go see? Jehoiada. That means Jehoiada what? Is still alive. Okay, and so then there's the reforms that are going on, and they continue to go on. And we're told here in 2 Chronicles that Jehoiada is still alive when all of the work is completed. Make sense? And they're performing all these sacrifices all the days of Jehoiada. So let's just assume for a moment, only 7 years. 7 years. That 7 years after that decree, okay, was what it took to make all the pieces and the workmen doing all their work and all that kind of stuff. And so let's assume then that Jehoiada dies around the 30th year of Joash. Does it make sense? That's kind of a fair assessment, okay? That would mean that Jehoiada, okay, would have died in the year 3313. If he lived 130 years, then go backwards, because that means that he would have been born in 3183. Do you see it? Do you see the impact of this? When was Jehoiada born? Right at the time of Solomon's death. I'm not going to claim the exactness of this. Could have been no year after. Could have been a year before. Could have been 3 years before. But right at the time of Solomon's death, what did Jehoiada grow up? What was the culture in which he grew up? What did he see? What did he experience? What did he know? That whole division, okay? And so right after Solomon brought in all that wickedness and all the idolatry, right? So when he's born into an idolatrous country, right? Rehoboam has this, okay? But he's born into the family of a priest. I believe he's the high priest. So he's probably born into that Aaronic priesthood, okay, as he comes through, okay? And so he's seeing this as he's growing up. And he's probably just mortified. His family is probably mortified at what's going on here. The adultery taking over and the worship of Yahweh being gone. And now all of a sudden we have Asa. Yeah. I listened to Mr. Chuck's message and I heard that he got you to come up and do that. Was that fun? You want to do it again? No, I'm just joking. And so now comes Asa, and Asa brings what? Reform. Well, let's see. That's 3246. That's about 60-ish years. Jehoiada's in his 50s at this point. You starting to see a little bit? Okay. So, in his 40s, 50s, when did he become the high priest? I don't know. We're not told that. But he's in his 40s and his 50s. Do you think he's in a position of influence yet? Huh. And so I can't prove any of this. Make sense? But isn't it fun? Chronology is fun. History is fun when you really begin to look at it. And I begin to wonder to myself, I wonder how long Jehoiada, a man of influence. And so then you have Jehoshaphat. And again, Jehoiada's around, and I wonder, what did he do when Jehoshaphat made a decision to marry off his son to the daughter of Ahab? Ah, how devastating, right? So he's watching all this from a side. And you think he knew? Do you think he knew in the pit of his stomach what was coming? I think he did. And I think he was ready for the moment. And so Ahaziah dies. He probably couldn't have predicted that. He probably didn't know how all that stuff was going to go on. But he knew when it happened, something had to be what? Done. And like Esther, maybe for such a time as this. Do you realize when all this is going on, how old he has to be? He's got to be close to 90. He lived to 130. So 130, and Joash reigns 40 years, but he dies before Joash, right? So even if he lived the entire same length as Joash, he'd have been 90 years old when Joash became king. He's around 90 years old when he's hiding Joash. He's just an old man. And his wife, undoubtedly, is an old woman. Who are they? I mean, they're about ready to die. They got one foot in the grave already. They were older than you, Ben. That's hard to imagine, isn't it? I mean, your wife, I want to say that because your wife said that. And so, I mean, you think about 90 years old. He already was ancient in their days. Who was he to decide that he was going to influence world history? But God had placed him in a spot for a purpose. I believe God has placed me and God has placed you in a particular spot for a particular purpose. And in 2 years from now, I'm going to find out how much hanging 10 and going through the tunnels you did in Waikiki. No! God is going to send Charles someplace, yes? To be a man of influence. At the government's expense. He gets to be a missionary. To Hawaii. I want to swap. He can preach for you guys and I get to go to Waikiki. Anyways. Yeah, they wouldn't have sent me there. They'd have sent me to Fort Polk. Anyways, so guys in the military, you get that one. Anyways, so wherever he winds up landing, does that make sense? Do we want Charles and Lisa to stay here? 100%. But God's ways are higher than our ways. And so Jehoiada was poised and positioned for this moment. 130 years. Imagine what he has seen and the opportunity for him to be an influence over all those years. How cool is that? And after the work was accomplished that God had purposed for him, God allowed him to die. Isn't that something? Do you know when Methuselah died? At the flood. The year of the flood. I think he died just before the flood. That God held off the flood till Methuselah died. Do you realize he lived longer than his son, Lamech? Lamech lived 777 years. He was just a kid. That's still pretty long. But Methuselah outlived his son. 969 years. Well, 200 years older, but actually he only outlived his son by, I don't even want to say, I just looked at this, and it's only like 7 to 17 years or 70 years or something like that. It's not very long from that perspective. And so Lamech dies, 777, not 666, and then I think that's important. That God doesn't make mistakes. There's a reason for that. And so then it's a godly line. And then Methuselah. But God had a purpose, right? So Methuselah lives all the way to the time of the flood. And then there's Noah, his grandson, who is going to be the one who God uses to go into the ark. An amazing thing. So anyways, God allows Jehoiada to live this entire way. And we find out in his burial, they buried him in the city of David among the kings. The people did this. Do you realize the prestige that Jehoiada had at the end? He was not buried among the kings. That was for the kings. But what did the people recognize? It was the influence. Go ahead, say it. He influenced the nation like a king. And respectfully, he never usurped the king. He let the king be the king. I'm sure there were things that he probably wanted to have done, but Joash didn't do. But he used what God had established and followed the pattern. Well, we got to keep flying on here, though, okay? Because now we got to go into the influence of the leaders of Judah. And this is a negative, okay? It was a path that was leading to unrighteousness. Now, this is huge because you know Psalm 1, okay? You don't need to turn there. But we know that blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of the sinner, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. Stop there. We don't have to quote the rest of it. We'll skip the blessed man in a moment, and we'll go to the consequences and the judgment of the of that unblessed man in a moment, okay? But there's a pattern that God declares in that psalm, okay? There is a progression where the first step of leading to unrighteousness is listening to the counsel of the ungodly. What's the first thing we see that happens in the life of Joash here, okay, when Jehoiada dies? Immediately when Jehoiada dies, we see, verse 17, now after the death of Jehoiada, the leaders of Judah came and bowed down to the king, and the king listened to them. Therefore they left the house of Yahweh, God of their fathers, and served wooden images and idols, and wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem because of their trespasses. We're going to continue to pick that up in a second. Joash has a decision to make, doesn't he? Jehoiada is now gone. But do you think he knew what Jehoiada would counsel? Do you think he knew what Jehoiada would challenge him to do and not do? I think so. I think it's there. But then all of a sudden the leaders come, right? And what do the leaders do? What did we read it? What does it say they did? They came before him and they bowed before him. They paid homage. Oh, king, don't miss words. They didn't just come up to him and start talking to him. They came down and they massaged his ego. They began seducing him. They began going to his pride. And they gave him false homage. And so we see that Joash listened to the seductive false homage of the leaders when they came to him. Be careful of someone who comes to you with a silver tongue. Generally, they want something. You know that. You can finish that. They want something. When someone is seeking to massage your ego and build you up, it's generally because they want something else. Now, is that always? No. But a word to the what? Wise, okay? Is to be careful of the intent of the charmer. Okay? And so Joash didn't. He listened to it. He listened to it. He knew better than that, I think. After 30-something years of listening to the teachings of Jehoiada, the instruction of Jehoiada, you'd think that he would have known better, but he didn't do that. Well, the sect leads to the second step, and that is standing in the path of sinner. And so we read the therefore, verse 18. Therefore, the king listened to them. Verse 18, therefore, because the king listened to the seductive homage, false leadings of the leaders of Judah, therefore, they left the house of Yahweh, God of their fathers, and served wooden images and idols. What are the wooden images and idols? Asherah and Baal. Asherah and Baal. They went back. Who ridded the land of the Baals?
Joash, who restored the Baals? Joash. How sad. And you think to yourself, how could he have done that? By being, as I go back at the beginning of the message, easily influenced. Of not holding to that which I know he knew to be true. They served one image. Psalm 25, verse 8 says, good and upright is Yahweh, therefore he teaches sinners in the way. And so God has a desire for sinners to repent, yes? And so he says that he will send instruction. He will teach sinners in the way. Well, and so God did that. God sent Zechariah then with some instructions. We can pick up the story, right? Verse 19, yet he, that is God, sent prophets to them to bring them back to Yahweh, and they testified against them, but they would not listen. Then the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, the priest, who stood above the people and said to them, thus says God, why do you transgress the commandments of Yahweh so that you cannot prosper? Because you have forsaken Yahweh, he has also forsaken you. So they conspired against him, Zechariah, and at the command of the king, they stoned him with stones in the court of the house of Yahweh. The third step, sitting in the seat of the scornful. Literally, it means dwelling in the dwelling place of the mockers. To make mouths at. How sad! What do we see? Joash sat in the seat of judgment, and he mocked the word of God. God was calling out to him, reminding him of all the things that he had learned through Jehoiada to restore the people, to bring them back. Listen, you're falling away. Don't do this. Don't do this. And what was Joash's response? He stoned the son of his faithful mentor. Where? In the court of the temple. In the court of the temple of the house of God. I just can't fathom how all this could have occurred in such a short time. How could this, just yesterday we were serving God and now today we're killing the prophets. It doesn't take very long, does it? Does this kind of sound like U.S. history a little bit? You ain't seen nothing yet. Sad but true. Jesus declared that in the end times, because evil would abound, the love of many will wax cold. He's not talking about unbelievers there. Because evil abounded, the love of Joash waxed cold. Do you see it? God forbid. God help me. That's one of my... God, I don't want to wax cold. I hate the battle in my mind between my flesh and my spirit in the battle. And why do I do the things I don't want to do and I don't do the things I do want to do? I know there's this war. God, help me through Jesus Christ. Deliver me. Give me the victory. Don't let me be one of those whose love waxes cold. Let me burn. Let me burn for you. I don't care if I burn out for you, Jesus. Let me just burn. Let my desire be for you. Not for the lust of my flesh and the things of this world. Joash's love, his desire, changed by those he allowed to influence him. And sadly then, it led a path that was leading to judgment. You had the attack of the Syrians. See, in 2 Kings... we don't read what we read here in 2 Chronicles. We just kind of read that all of a sudden there was an attack by the Syrians. But now we understand from 2 Chronicles why the attack of the Syrians came. Why did it come? Because the wrath of God was upon them. God was now disciplining his people because they had turned away. They had turned to him. And now instantly they turned away from him. And God says, not again. It's not happening again. And God sends the Syrians. And look at what it says here. This is, I just can't skip this part. Look at what it says. Verse
23. So it happened in the spring of the year that the army of Syria came up against him, and they came to Judah and Jerusalem and destroyed all the leaders of the people. Huh, all the leaders of the people. Wonder who those people were. I think they were the ones up that were kneeling before Joash and paying homage, right? And they destroyed all the leaders of the people from among the people and sent all their spoil to the king of Damascus. Now listen to this. For the army of the Syrians came with a small company of men, but Yahweh delivered a very great army into their hand because they had forsaken Yahweh, God of their fathers. Do you remember back in Deuteronomy? God said, when you're serving me, I'm going to bless you. And you're going to go in and they're going to run from you in seven ways. But when you don't, the little one's going to come after you and you're going to what? Flee in seven ways. He sent just a little company, a small company of Syrians. They probably were just thinking they were going to come in and do some harassment in Judah. And what did they accomplish? They wiped them out. How amazing. Why? Because God said he did it. So I ask myself, is there ever times when I'm feeling failures in my life and I want to know why? I have to ask myself, is it because God is trying to get my attention? And finally, the assassination by his servants. How sad the way Joash's life ends. He could have been recorded with one of the greatest kings ever in Judah. But in the end, he's not even buried with the kings. He's not even buried with the kings. So in the end, what path are you following? To whose counsel have you been listening? How would you know good counsel from ungodly counsel? That's really the question that I asked myself coming through there. I mean, how did I expect Joash to know that those leaders were giving him ungodly counsel? Because he should have been in what? The Word of God. How much time do you spend in searching the Scriptures? Remember the Bereans. Who were the Bereans? They got counsel from who? From Paul. The Apostle Paul. But you know what? They didn't believe a word he said. They checked it out. They searched the Scriptures daily. How often? Daily. Do you realize they didn't have a copy of their own Bible? Do you realize they didn't have a computer to do this on? That they actually had to go someplace to get the scrolls, to look at the scrolls? They actually had a purpose time in their day to go do that. They had to go to the synagogue to check Paul out. They searched the Scriptures daily to find out whether the things that Paul was declaring was true. Say that again? Did they have a concordance? No, they didn't have a concordance. Isn't that amazing? They had nothing, just a scroll. How are you influencing those around you? Is there a need to change the way you think and therefore change the way you act?